This Monday, world leaders are going to be gathered here in New York City for the United Nations Climate Action Summit. The eyes of the world will be on them. They have a chance to prove that they, too, are united behind the science. They have a chance to take leadership, to prove they actually hear us. Do you think they hear us? We will make them hear us.
It is Monday, September 23rd, 2019, DJ of the UN Climate Action Summit, and I am ready to hand the world over to the youth, folks. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, yes, indeed. This past Friday began historic climate strikes around the world, and they put the issue of climate change front and center. More than 4 million people, mostly young folks, around the world took to the streets. And while climate strikers filled the streets, the GOP leadership was in private meetings with the fossil fuel industries. According to The Intercept, on September 18th and 19th, as Greta Thunberg met with lawmakers, House Minority Whip Steve Scalise hosted fundraisers with oil and gas lobbyists to raise cash for the Scalise Leadership Fund, a political action committee used to dole out cash for battleground House races across the country. It could not be more stark than that, folks. And as I said, today is the UN Climate Action Summit in New York City. Ahead of this, international leaders have said that they are going to make new concrete emission reductions. We'll see about that. And the United States is not expected to join the rest of the world. A matter of fact, we are going backwards, folks. We are going backwards. Texas is drowning once again under the wettest one of the wettest storms in U.S. history. Tropical Storm Imelda dumped up to 42 inches of rain on southeastern Texas and has caused at least 5 deaths. This is about the third storm in the past 5 years that has been a quote-unquote 100-year storm. The University of California system announces that it is ending all investments in fossil fuels. The UC's divestment is the largest fossil fuel divestment yet. According to Vox, quote, by the end of September, the UC's $70 billion pension fund and $13.4 billion endowment will no longer hold any stakes in companies involved with extracting fossil fuels. Frickin' kudos to them. All eyes on everybody else now, especially those Ivy Leagues who have got deep, deep, deep money in fossil fuels. And California is also suing the Trump administration over auto emission standards. Yep, Trump is trying to make it illegal for California to set higher emission standards. How about that? How about that? And the Trump administration in like the nonstop climate news this past week, right? This is what happens when you get millions of people in the street. You actually get to pay attention to this shit. The Trump administration ignored reports from officials from the Customs and Border Protection, you know, his people, that climate change is one of the key factors driving record immigration from Central America. And AOC makes the case that Nancy Pelosi's refusal to get behind impeachment is a bigger scandal than Trump's lawlessness. Right? As Sam Cedar said on the Majority Report multiple times, when we look back on this point in history, the biggest scandal, we're going to look and say, look, our founders, they envisioned someone like Trump, and we had procedures for it. What they didn't envision is someone like Nancy Pelosi, someone who refused to use those machines, those mechanisms to remove a lawless, corrupt, and, you know, quasi-dictator. New Mexico announces plans to give all residents, tuition-free college regardless of income. So much for Joe Biden's like, it can't be done, or Amy Klobuchar's promises you can't keep. And yes, I'm going to have to give my weekly rant on the left, forgetting that power lies in the people, not political messiahs. 63% of Pennsylvania's 10th congressional district voters believe in climate change. But Scott Perry recently signed off supporting resolutions attacking the Paris Accords. Drown, baby, drown. In today's PA Focus, PA Senator Mike Fulmer has resigned. I wonder what happened. Ah, yes. He's being charged with possession of child pornography. And then they got his phone and they found more. There you go.
Get his phone over.
Yeah, PAGOP. Well, you know, you got to go mobile with this stuff. And Betsy DeVos was in Harrisburg on Thursday to visit the Harrisburg Catholic Elementary School and promote school vouchers. And, you know, anywhere Betsy DeVos goes is generally going to go well. Right? But it was House Speaker Mike Terzai who sucked all the air out of the building as he was called a retired school teacher special interest people who don't care about the children. You know, you just like the monopoly. You like the monopoly, and you don't care about children. You don't care about children. That worked well. And EBSCA, yeah, State System of Higher Education Faculty Union, notifies its members that they reached a quote-unquote agreement in principle, whatever the hell that is. An expired contract. Contract expired back in June 30th. Now members will have to wait and see if the leadership can turn principles into contract language. Members have little idea about what principles have been agreed to, so we shall see. And of the agreement, EBSCA President Ken Mash said, quote, I believe that the agreement in principle represents a historic advance in the process of creating a shared vision about how our university should operate to best serve our students. Yep, looks like we're in a new era of Silicon Valley win-win discourse. Or is it Anand Giridharadas? Giridharadas, has dubbed it the, quote, elite charade of changing the world. And in today's last call, yes, Free Will had some freaking awesome releases this past weekend. I'm telling you, this is the way to close out the summer if you ever could. It had a blackberry raspberry mash. It's a sour ale brewed with blackberries and raspberries, puree, vanilla, and milk sugar. Comes in at 7.5 ABV. And a blackcurrant chocolate mash, which nearly made me die. A sour ale brewed with blackcurrant puree, cocoa nibs, vanilla, and milk sugar at 7.5 ABV. It was freaking awesome. I'll tell you more about it there. Want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Don't forget to download Rick Smith's daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. And remember, you know, so you might have seen it this past week. We've got some new articles up there by some new contributors. We've got some more on the way. And that's been made possible for, you know, members that have been with us for a long time or members that have just joined within the past couple weeks. So thank you. The best way you can help support Pull No Punches Progressive Media is by becoming a member. Go to Raging Chicken Press. Go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level for as little as $5 a month, folks. $5 a month. It's like going out and getting a decent beer. $5. Right, you can do this. You can do this. Sean, how the hell are you, man?
I'm doing great. It seems like you woke up on the right side of the bed today.
I did, man. I got a good night's sleep. I went to bed with dreams of Free Will sour mashes in my brain. It was wonderful. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I really wanted to ask that question to Terzai the other day, but I didn't have the chance to. I wanted to ask him after I got done unloading on those teachers if you woke up on the wrong side of the bed that morning.
Yeah, what happened there, Mikey? Ah, yeah, Monopolis. I was dreaming of Monopolis, and they look just like...
So we'll have to get like a free... We'll get a secondhand story of this. I believe the cameraman who got this was named Johnny Living Room.
Johnny Living Room.
He got this. Now, we'll talk about that later.
We'll bring on our special correspondent, Johnny Living Room, in later on. Oh man. Yeah, we'll definitely get to that. So we're probably gonna do one straight segment today, folks. Sean's busy schedule is gonna take him away fast. Oh, sorry about that. I should play that later. That was my daughter. I accidentally hit the at the soundboard. But Sean has got a busy day today. I gotta get into work. So we're just gonna do this. We did not. I hope you heard my my announcement for those folks who are waiting for our podcast to drop every week that we did not record on Friday because it was the day of the historic climate strikes around the world. And I headed out to Allentown. Sean headed out to Harrisburg. But, I mean, you got to say, I mean, 4 million plus people in the streets around the world. It was amazing. And this is like the largest protest in the history, climate protest in the history of the world. And what made this one even more distinct, with this one, it was being organized from the ground up, from young folks around the world. Greta Thunberg, who is the Swedish activist, 16-year-old now, has helped spark the movement. Has been an inspiration for kids around the world. And she kind of credits, and she did this again when she spoke in New York City this past week, and she credited students from Parkland, Florida, who walked out in response to gun violence, as giving her the inspiration and courage to start the climate strike. So you see a truly kind of like back and forth kind of network of young folks, young activists. And I'll tell you, nobody has been moving the needle on climate change like these young folks. And thank God for that, because for those of us who have been trying to, hammering our head against the wall to try to, get people to pay attention here, finally people are paying attention to it. And today is really, this is huge. Today is the UN Climate Action Summit in New York ahead of the UN General Meeting. And we shall see if there's anything that concrete is going to come out of that. And what the good thing is that you're going to have millions of people around the world who are actually going to be paying attention to what happens there and holding these leaders accountable when they go back home.
Yeah. It was nice seeing the actions out here in Harrisburg. It was a nice sizable protest in the Capitol steps. We had about 200 people out, a bunch of different speakers from state government, local government, people running for office. It was sort of interesting. It's nice seeing these. For me, it was almost like your regular protest on the Capitol steps type thing. It's a little bit jaded after being out here for 5 years, but it's good seeing people who from the community get out, who typically don't get out for any of these protests.
Yep.
These are people from the local Midtown neighborhood, from the West Shore. People who are pretty active, or might be just, are following, know what climate change is, and who got out for it. And typically people who are not engaged in everyday protest or politics they usually see on the Capitol steps. So that was refreshing and reassuring.
Well, and I think the message, what's really good about how this has taken place and how this happened, just like we saw in Parkland, Florida, right? When you had kind of kids that organized and put this out, then we started seeing the needle move for the first time, right? Actual policies being put in place and pressure being put on lawmakers, right? Because, what's great about, these young folks is they're just getting in people's faces and they don't give a shit. They're not trying to kind of like make sure that they're, they're saying the right thing and not offending certain people because that might jeopardize their future careers. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Know what I mean? They're out there pushing. They're actually pushing people to kind of like be accountable, and they're not pulling any punches in what they say, And I was trying to decide which clip to play of Greta Thunberg here. The second one, she said, look, all these leaders come up and they want to kind of pat us on the back and take selfies with us and saying how inspirational we are. And she's like, we don't want that. We want you to act. And I think that idea about accountability, and if we just kind of like rewind the clock a little bit and think back to the Women's March, think back to the launch of Indivisible, think back to the rise of DSA, and all of these organizations which have been slowly building power and have turned the focus away from let's do kind of like celebrity national politics, and instead let's focus on local and regional races and getting in the face of politicians and forcing them to do what they're supposed to do, right? And keeping the pressure on. And I think we see that in a huge way in the climate strikes, and we're going to see it all throughout the week.
Yeah. It's good to see this is finally an issue. Again, this ties in with what we saw this past week with the tropical storm Almeda down in Texas, with the hurricane that just ripped through the Bahamas. We've seen it the past couple of years with what happened in Puerto Rico. We are, again, there's parts of the U.S. coastline that are going to be inhabitable within the next 10, 15 years. It's I mean, how many more storms can Houston take like that, dumping 30, 40 inches of rain, having a tropical storm, not even a hurricane that, you know, it's amazing where hurricanes only used to dump like 10 inches of rain and that would be okay because they would just move right through. Now you have these slow moving tropical storm systems that are just dumping 30, 40 inches of rain. You got to think about like all the water, all the extra heat and all the extra water that's going up into the atmosphere that is just charging these storms and giving them that much more energy. And really, like, they're carrying that much more water vapor with and just dropping all that extra rain. I mean, yeah, the storms might not be stronger per se in the sense of, you know, cataclysmic winds or stuff like that, which, yeah, that's going to happen. But we're also going to see these smaller storms that are just going to dump 20, 30, 40 inches of rain. And, you know, like, that wasn't even like a 100-year flood. That's probably like a 500-year or a 1,000-year flood that they had. I mean, 3 500-year floods within the past couple of years.
It's crazy.
I mean, it's going to take more than just, like, infrastructure improvements to do this. But, I mean, like, yeah, the infrastructure, our infrastructure is going to make climate change much worse. Like, the effects of it.
Yeah.
The way we have levied off these rivers in such a way where we don't allow spill off, you know, where we, you know, we build right up to the coastlines, where we have destroyed and plowed over and filled in all the wetlands, you know, like this is going to be decades of, you know, infrastructure malpractice. And yeah, we're going to be in a tough time. And, you know, like, infrastructure is not going to fix this problem. It'll lessen it if we have good infrastructure, but like that, we're not building our way out of this.
No, there is no way.
I mean, because like I'm also like thinking about, you know, we have a really important fight. What's happening up here in Harrisburg right now with the stormwater runoff system here? So under the previous administrations, the Regional Water Authority went decades of neglecting any improvements to the water infrastructure. Right. Especially wastewater treatment. I don't know if Harrisburg has a wastewater treatment plant, but it, like literally like the wastewater, the crap straight from the Capitol goes straight from the Capitol into the Susquehanna. Like, and that, yeah, like that. But when you have a wastewater treatment plant and you have stormwater mixing into the sewage system, that's going to force like we don't have the infrastructure to deal with that. And in Harrisburg, like, we've been getting deluges of rain over the past couple of years where it would just rain for 20 minutes and dump 2 or 3 inches of rain. Yep. And we don't get these long soaking storms, like, you know, misting storms or anything like that. We get a storm that dumps 2 inches of rain within 30 or 40 minutes, and then it just pushes everything into the Susquehanna. Like, we have a mayor who's trying to privatize the water system right now because the Capital Regional Water Authority is implementing a payer pollution tax, a stormwater runoff tax, over which will affect landowners the most, which is what, you know, our mayor has a large amount of land. His developers have a large amount of land, and he's trying to privatize the water authority because of this wastewater treatment plan that the regional water authority is putting in place. And with that, we saw a bunch of things go in over the summer. But I mean, like, yeah, I mean, we're making these infrastructure improvements, but I mean, like,
I hear you. Look,
it's disheartening. I mean, like, we need these infrastructure improvements, but it's also the type of thing to lessen the increasing disasters of what's happening.
Well, this is the thing, right? This is why, you know, I personally, right, and a lot of other folks, I'm just behind the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
Right. Because basically what the Green New Deal lays out as kind of starts in principle and in the various different plans, particularly in Bernie Sanders' plans. Bernie Sanders has probably got the most kind of aggressive plan kind of out there at this point. But is that it's saying, look, this is not an either or choice anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's also like it's not either or. It's we have to go to renewables and we have to build out our infrastructure.
And. I mean, it goes right down the road because we also have to kind of like fundamentally like readdress like how we, I mean, this is why like folding in stuff like economic justice and folding in kind of like, you know, like green jobs and like jobs programs and folding in things like Medicare for all is absolutely critical because this crisis, right, hits everyone right across the board. It's like, so not only do we need infrastructure, that infrastructure is probably not going to be able to keep up with. Even as they build it out, is not going to keep up with all that. And we know the areas that are not going to be protected first are going to be the areas that are poorest. Right. So that you're going to have a disproportionate impact on kind of the poorest communities, not just on the coasts. Right. But right in our own backyards. Right. So this has to be about social justice and not just about kind of like climate or greenhouse gas reduction. That is an absolutely essential. I mean, but this is why, like, Naomi Klein just came out with her latest book this past week. I'm in the middle of reading it right now. It's called On Fire. Right. The Burning Case for a Green New Deal. And, you know, again, this is the case that Naomi Klein has been making for a long time. The folks from brand new Congress have been making for a long time. What the Sunrise Movement has been kind of focused on is, like, we need this kind of just transition kind of moving forward that is going to address everything in a comprehensive fashion. And we don't have any more time left. Right. And this is why, you know, again, the urgency, this is the first time. This is why, for me, I feel especially heartened. Like, even though, like, I went to the Allentown, like, you know, I went to the Allentown climate strike on Friday, and there weren't, like, you know, thousands of people in the street. Right. But it was knowing that, like, people are paying attention and the news media was there to pay attention to this, and knowing that this is not the kind of thing that generally gets attention. And yet, like, as Greta Thunberg has pointed out, is basically, look, it's like, we know the science, we know the results, yet we're acting as if, like, nothing's going on. We're in a crisis and we're acting as if it's just another day. We have to start acting that we're in the crisis that it is. And it, again, it's going to take it across the board. Right.
So, yeah. I wanted to move into, you know, one of the things I came across this past week, especially with the climate change coverage mm-hmm. I came across yesterday. You remember that project that Sean McCluey was starting, Data for Progress?
Yes, 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 yes.
And so Sean McCluey was a writer with The Nation magazine. He started this new organization called Data for Progress, and they're going to be looking at flippable districts or state seats. That's going to be focusing on flipping state legislators, state Senate races, state House races, and also congressional races. And they're going to, like, they're polling. What they're doing is they're coming up with methods for polling certain issues within these districts, within these congressional lines or Senate lines. And then they're bringing the data forward. And one of the things I thought was pretty interesting, because I was doing my, like, you know, every few days just searching for Scott Perry clips and see what's happening. this actually came up. 63% of the voters in the Pennsylvania 10th district, which, you know, central Pennsylvania is not the harbinger of, like, progressive politics. Like, you know, it's, or, like, a lot of people are going to be making this, like, off to be Trump country in the next year, when it's really not Trump country. It's changing very fast. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, this district would have been Trump country. Now, with how much it's changing rapidly and with how many people are coming in, it's flipping very quickly. And this is one of the things. On the other side of the country, in central Pennsylvania's 10th congressional district, a majority, 63% of voters support putting a price on carbon pollution. But their congressman, Representative Scott Perry, co-sponsored a resolution in opposition to a carbon tax that has said that Trump's decision to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement was, quote, a solid first step in reasserting the role of U.S. Constitution in international affairs and domestic policies. Unfortunately, for Perry, a majority of Americans by a 2-to-1 margin opposed Trump's decision to withdraw from the landmark global climate change agreement.
There you go.
And I mean, like, what they're doing is they're going around from district to district, poll testing these cases in flippable districts. And it's like, no, I mean, they're going to be providing really good ammunition for Democrats to run on when it comes to messaging and the poll numbers and stuff like that. Because,
well, I mean, hopefully it just helps like bolster the spine of Democrats, right? Who have, like, who've shied away from any kind of, like, aggressive, like,
messaging
when it comes to social justice, when it comes to climate change and things like this. And they're starting to seeing, like, no. Actually, running on addressing climate change, right, in a just way is actually a winning ticket.
And then, like, when a couple weeks ago when Beto said, yeah, we're going to take your guns at the debate, like, the numbers support him. Like, over a majority of voters support, you know, mandatory buybacks for AR-15s.
Yep.
And it shows you that really, like, the paper tiger that the opposition is.
Well, and you know, as soon as he said that, there were all these consultants for the Democratic centrists that out there that their heads exploding,
and Buttigieg went on TV the next day screaming, "We can't be doing this. We can't be doing this."
Right? Exactly. No! We can't go back to sleep. Go back to sleep. Guns are going to kill us all. I mean the NRA. I mean help.
No, but I mean, like, that was, like, the centrist response to that when, like, they've ceded decades
right
on messaging on guns and other issues to, like, the center. Yeah, but enough of my diatribe on that.
Yeah, no. It's, absolutely.
I would definitely recommend going in there and also pay attention to what McCloughey is doing with Data for Progress. And this is a really good art piece they teamed up with the League of Conservation Voters with. Yep. So it's in the thing, and I definitely recommend looking at it.
Yeah, and just so that everybody's clear, Data for Progress is not connected with Think Progress, right? So they are separate entities. They are not like he is not part of the union busting team over at Think Progress. So let's just
this is something Sean McCloughey dreamed up on his own one day and started. And
yeah. Yeah, so I bet you he's kind of like, damn, I wish I didn't choose that. but still, yeah.
Sort of like Spotlight PA?
Yeah, exactly. PA Spotlight. Spotlight PA. They're the same thing, right? crazy. All right, one thing I just want to mention is, like, you know, look, I think AOC has finally had it this week. is so fed up with Nancy Pelosi's refusal, not just refusal to act on impeachment, but actively working against House members. And now you have, I forget the number right now, but it's like the majority of the caucus is now, over majority of the caucus is behind kind of filing impeachment. And Nancy Pelosi seems to be the single biggest barrier to actually moving forward with an aggressive impeachment clause. And she keeps on, and I'll give you, for example, Heidi Hess from Credo Action. This is kind of what she had to say. She said, Pelosi must stop playing craven political games and lead now. It's past time for her to throw her full support behind moving forward with impeachment proceedings. AOC took to Twitter, basically launched this out, and she said, quote, at this point, the bigger national scandal isn't the president's law-breaking behavior. It is the Democratic Party's refusal to impeach him for it. That's what she said. And she said, it's one thing for a sitting president to break the law. It's another to let him. Right. And I think that is one of the key stories. And like I mentioned at the top, is that Sam Cedar has been kind of coming back to this again and again. He said, you know, look, our constitutional framers, they were prepared and they could imagine someone like Donald Trump. What they couldn't imagine is someone like Nancy Pelosi. Right. Someone who actually refused to get rid of a despotic leader. This is where we are. And it's astounding that she continues to try to message, from my perspective, that, you know, coming out like she's outraged at his lawless behavior, especially in light of like this, the recent phone calls to Ukraine in exchange for kind of like
asking to investigate Biden's son.
Right. And he last night just broke that he admitted it. Right. I talked about Joe Biden when I was on the phone with the leader of Ukraine. Right. So he's actually said it now. And still, it's like, it's like how many times you got to, I mean, and this is like what Nancy Pelosi.
Like, how many presidential candidates have to come out and support impeachment at this point? Like,
right.
Like, I mean, he threat. I mean, like, yeah.
Here's
I mean,
the thing.
With the locker up chance. And now we're going to go after Joe Biden. It's going to be lock him up.
Right.
Like these people are gearing up to go after anyone involved with the Mueller investigation and go after them publicly. And then go after Biden's son. This is like almost worse than Nixon, I guess.
God! I mean, are you kidding? Because this is like soup to nuts corruption.
This is like Nixon on steroids, I guess. I wasn't around back then.
Look, if you took neither was I, but if you took Nixon, well, actually, I was there for part of it, I guess, but I don't remember any of it. If you took Nixon, right, and you ripped any kind of moral compass away from him. I mean, he didn't have a big one to begin with, right? But you ripped any moral compass away from it, right? You basically you made him go live with the mob for 5 years to learn their ways and means, and then you put him into power and let him go. I mean, it's that exponentially different, and it's comprehensive, right? there's nothing. And if you think about it, like Nixon, I mean, Nixon, you can actually point to some policy, some policy shifts under the Nixon administration, like the EPA, for example, and, you know, went to China, and he actually put in some kind of positive legislation. We could have problems with it and everything like this. Trump, there's nothing positive. It's just about destruction. It's about destruction and corruption. And I don't know who's a better candidate. Like, I've never seen, nobody's ever seen a better candidate for impeachment than this. And Nancy Pelosi is just not moving it. And I really think that at the core of it is like, this is like what, like this Democratic centrism and belief in the overwhelming power of the kind of the Republicans and this kind of mythical, like right centrist country is like, it's like this. You know, Donald Trump is basically going out and saying, yeah, I dare you to impeach me. Right. And what Nancy Pelosi and some other Democrats hear is like, oh, he wants us to do that. So we're not going to play into his hand. So we're not going to impeach it. Take that. Right. I mean, that's like the game she's playing.
I mean, and also like we're enabling him to do, and like we're enabling this to happen. Any other leader down the road.
That's exactly it.
I mean, we're enabling this guy to take a sledgehammer to any standard Democratic norms that are like left standing at this point.
No, exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like this. If you got a guy, right, who you find out is beating his kids, right? Think about that. He's abusing everything that's going on. He's abusing everybody around him, right? And you find this out and he says, yeah, I dare you to prosecute me. And then the police come around and they say, oh, we better not go after him because he wants us to prosecute him. So let the kids keep on getting beat. I mean, it's freaking crazy. It's freaking crazy. And the playing this kind of bullshit kind of pragmatism, quote unquote pragmatism, not even pragmatic anymore. Like, this is actually a losing strategy because you got a guy who you're telling is breaking the law and is fundamentally destroying our democracy. And your solution is, well, we need to kind of like, we need to get our hands on more documents and we need to kind of like be outraged and show up at the vote. But you've shown everybody that you're not going to do anything. So no one's going to trust you. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. So good on AOC once again for kind of for jumping back in on this.
And when people show you who they are, really are, believe them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Instead of playing some kind of like, you know, 10-dimensional chess that you're playing really only with yourself. Right.
like this past weekend when Mike Terzai showed us who he was.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I can't wait to get to this. Well, let me just say one thing. I got to get on my rant before we kind of move to local stuff. So, look. And I'm going to say this until I piss everybody off and nobody wants to hear it anymore. And you're going to get bored with it. And I don't care. Right. Because I'm getting increasingly frustrated with some of the discussions that are going on about Bernie versus Warren. OK. And let me just I'm going to stipulate at the top of this. Right. That a lot of the analysis. Right. About where Bernie stands on labor stuff, where Bernie stands on his commitment, all this kind of stuff is accurate. And where a lot of some of the criticisms where it comes in with Warren, right, about, you know, her having a more kind of insider approach and all that kind of stuff, I get it. And those are your important critiques. As a matter of fact, on the Majority Report this week, I'm going to forget her name. I should have pulled it up. On Thursday, I think it was, Michael Brooks was hosting on the Majority Report and had this woman on who wrote a recent piece in the Jacobin called, you know, we need to kind of be basically being paying attention to Elizabeth Warren's medical plans. Saying there's some issues there. She's been avoiding some things on it. These are really important things to have and really important part of the analysis. What bothers me is when the discussion starts to shift into like, if anybody from the left side, right, if anybody starts to support Warren, right, they're a traitor, right? How could anybody do this? When it takes on this moralistic discourse, right, and basically saying that we need someone like Bernie in there who is going to do these things, right? And look, I am the last person in the world who is going to sit there and say that, you know, having Bernie in the White House wouldn't be an absolutely amazing thing for in terms of social movements or organizations. But the point is, it's everything is ass backwards, and these people are not even listening to what Bernie Sanders says. Bernie Sanders says the only way we do this is with a political revolution from the ground up, which means the power is in the hands of the people, right? So I say that. So if Warren gets elected, let's just say she gets the Democratic nomination, right? She could, and it's increasingly moving in that direction, right? That doesn't mean that all is a lost cause. It means that the work, there's that much more work to do for the movement to hold her to her principles. Because look, we know she's more of an insider player. We know that she's, but frankly, if you look at the work that she's done, like over the past, over the, you know, since her entire career has been nothing but advocating for people who have been on the receiving end of corporate malfeasance, right? She is not anti-worker. She's not as demonstrated pro-labor as Bernie. That's absolutely the case. But she's not anti-worker. So let's not play this ridiculous binary game where we're kind of looking and start trying to take these people down and then say anybody who might support this in some sort of weird kind of like cannot get out of like replay of the 2016 election, the primary. We're going to play this all over again in some weird way. Let's not do that. Let's put the faith not in some messianic character, right, at the top of a ticket, but in the movement. What has been extraordinary since 2016 has been the work that's been happening on the ground. And I think that all of us need to get it through our heads, no matter what happens moving forward, whether it's Bernie or Warren or, God forbid, Biden, right, is like what the only thing that is going to get us to where we need to go is us. Not them. These are freaking politicians at the end of the day. And you can love them and think they're awesome or not. I could care less. The power is with us, not with people at the top. Even Franklin Delano Roosevelt has said this. Make me do it. He knew that he was not going to put in the most important parts of the Green New Deal. I mean, I'm sorry, of the original New Deal, had it not been for the labor movement holding his feet to the fire. So let's get that through our heads, everybody, as we move forward in this election. Because we could rip it all apart and we could all go down to that. We're all going to die. We can do that, Rod, if you want to. That's fine. Right? But just know that that's on us. The minute you start putting faith in some sort of messianic figure, I don't give a shit who they are and how good they are, we've lost the way. End diatribe. I'll leave it at that. Sorry, Sean.
It's okay.
Oh, boy. Hey, we're just going to take a real quick break, and we're going to come right back. And, Sean, I'm just going to let the music play, and I just need a little quiet time to kind of get my composure before we move into more of the happier stuff that happened here in Pennsylvania. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We are back after a kind of very short break, just so I can gain my composure again, because we've got to turn the corner a little bit here because, well, I think we have to leave this one to our special correspondent. Sean, man, why don't you lead us on this one?
So my work last week revolved around nothing but charter schools. You know, and had a little go of it. You know, so Monday there was a big charter school press conference with the charter school lobbying groups going after Tom Wolf for the executive order he just came out with over the summer. And then on Tuesday, I was at the Charter Appeals Board meeting back in Harrisburg. They had their monthly meeting, and literally everyone phoned it in. Like, literally, no one was there. The only person was there was the general counsel from the Department of Ed, who is, like, the legal counsel for the secretary on this board, and everyone else called it in.
Well, you posted some pictures from that, right?
Yes.
I mean, it was hilarious. I mean, literally, when he says everyone called it in, he's like, this is not a metaphor. It's like there was a woman, right? She was a special counsel.
No.
Oh, was a guy?
The woman that was there, she was testifying for the school district.
Okay.
The guy that was sitting there, Mark Zaccarelli, with the microphones, he was the general counsel for the Department of Ed. And then just a line of empty microphones.
At the entire table, there was nobody there. I mean, it's like one of those big conference tables, nobody there.
So, again, it just shows you how much of a disarray this board is. They granted Franklin Town Charter an appeal with something happened with them. And then Eastern University, again, didn't have an actionable vote. So, like, their shit didn't get voted on. We'll have to be put on tabled for another month.
Unbelievable.
So then comes Thursday, a week I knew that Betsy DeVos was coming in probably around Tuesday. We got tipped off that the Secret Service was going through St. Patrick's Cathedral, going through the Cathedral School, and just scoping out the area for security reasons. And we were catching wind that DeVos would probably be in Harrisburg within the next couple of days. So we get a press release Wednesday night showing that DeVos was going to be in Harrisburg 8:00 in the morning at the St. Patrick's Cathedral School, which is right next to the school inside this alleyway. I was going to go in there as a press person, but I decided not to at the last minute. I didn't want to cause a scene.
Didn't want to make it all about me.
So everyone goes in, and a few minutes later, Mike Terzai comes walking down the alleyway, get my camera out. I have my phone out, start recording, and one of the education activists that we were with throws out a question to Mike Terzai, member of the PSEA organizer and spokeswoman, Laurie Lebo, about his stance on public schools, and then everything happened.
So I don't know if people have seen this video, but it was like jaw dropping. It really was. It's like Mike Terzai begins to respond to this question. You know, like this woman just holding a sign that says like, you know, I love schools or something.
Public
like
schools with a bus on it.
Love public schools, right? Yeah. That's it, right? That's her sign, right? So this is like, you know, how confrontational.
And the other sign is like more public dollars for more public
right,
schools.
Exactly, right? And that's it. And so initially, Terzai starts to say like, you know, well, you know, what you'd expect from a politician who doesn't agree with them. Well, you know, these are public schools too as well. And charters, there's a lot of students that want to get into this. But then something seems to snap, Sean. That's the best way I could describe it.
I mean, like, I'm watching this, I'm recording this, and I could not believe it while it was happening live. His staffers were really standing like 10 feet to the right of me, and I'm like, I'm looking over them as he's snapping on these women. And I'm like, yo, your boy over here is losing his stuff. You should probably get over here and save him. But like,
I look over like, hey, who over there is in charge of yanking the leash? come on, you're sleeping on the job here.
Where's the shepherd's hook at?
You got to curb your dog, man. He's shitting all over the sidewalk.
But like I actually spent time thinking about it. Like what he said, you know, basically he calls them special interest people who don't care about the schools. And the teacher goes, well, I'm offended by that.
Well,
and
not just care about the schools, doesn't care about the
children. Who doesn't care about the children. And she says, I'm offended by that. And then Terzai goes, well, I'm offended by your posters.
I love public schools.
Well, I'm a school teacher.
I know you are, but what am I?
And like, it was, so like this whole stuff goes up online. Terzai's office responds to us. And there's once the full video online, and they thought like putting a full video online would actually like vindicate them in any way. But no, it shows Terzai walking past the door to engage these people.
Right.
And like within like the first 30 seconds, Terzai goes, huh, bet you didn't know that, did you? Like these like snappy, like smarmy, condescending remarks. And like it didn't really dawn on me until watching the full video that was probably the triggering point when he said, I bet you didn't know that, did you? Because he said it a couple of other times. And then it just goes downhill from there. Like, and we were having this discussion. I was at state committee over the weekend, had to be there for PA Young Dems, and had this conversation a couple of times. Like,
name drop.
I had this conversation with people where it's like this is actually what he believes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like this is normal speak for him.
Right.
Like he must speak like that all the time to him and his staffers, where like calling public school teachers special interest people and calling them representatives of the monopoly and telling these public school teachers they don't care about the kids. And knowing what Mike Terzai has done with unprecedented expansions of the voucher system, charter schools in the state, and so on, like he carries the water for Betsy DeVos and for the charter school magnates in this state. Like he carries the water for them. And like this was so like stunning in how it came out. Like this is normal speak for them.
Yeah.
Like this is right. Normal conversations, you know. Yeah, screw the teachers. Like this is how, and it's like this is normal speak for them behind closed doors, and it's shocking when it comes out into like the regular lexicon, I guess, or the regular, like, you know, diaspora.
It's remarkable. It was really remarkable. I mean, the thing, and it was, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It was like, it's one thing, it's kind of like he didn't have the filter, or he didn't realize that he actually needed a filter. He actually believed that the rest of the world actually thinks and acts like him, that this would sound normal from what he said. Like, talking to a teacher who has worked for 20 years and basically says she doesn't care about the children. Right? And like, she was, like, visually taken back, like, too. What's that?
That's the only thing I could think of. Like, actually, this is what he believes. Like, it took me the weekend to, like, this is actually how he talks on a regular basis.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And for whatever reason, you know, like, and he just kept on going. And then you could see him digging in. It's like there literally was this point where you could see that, okay, this is what happens when you have, like, districts that you don't need to actually talk to your voters in any kind of, like, real way, right? Where you're just kind of, like, you're just in your own little kind of, you know, like, self-reinforcing, you know, world. And he kind of walks out of the world, and he's able to do the politician thing, like, for a very short period of time. But then he just can't tolerate that. He cannot give any type of respect or look at other human beings as kind of like someone you actually have a dialogue with. Instead, it's just kind of like, okay, yeah, you're a monopolist. Kind of like, you're a monopolist. You're after the kids. You want to kill the kids. You know, I mean, it's like practically, you know, it's like you want to take the kids and throw them in the Susquehanna. You don't care about the kids. I mean, no, he doesn't say that. But if you watch the video, and you could see, like, this. He just he
goes from zero to, like, unhinged in, like, 30 seconds flat.
And childish. I mean, that, yes. The whole idea is about, like, you bet you didn't know that, did you? Right? I mean, like, who the frick says that? I mean, especially you're talking about these two women who are standing there.
The House Speaker of all people.
Well, yeah, it's like, and it's not as if, like, this is a situation where, like, I could understand, like a politician or somebody getting rattled if you have, like
this
protesters
wasn't
even and
a gotcha question that was thrown out there. It's like, what do you think about public schools?
But it was not. And it wasn't they were being confrontational. It wasn't like in his face, like screaming in his face. And I could understand in that situation saying stuff that just kind of gets out of hand because you get angry, right? This one was kind of like, hey, what do you think about public schools? And I've got my, like, I love public schools sign. And you're saying that the sign offends me, that you don't care about the children, and you're just with the monopolist. I'm like,
and you're special interest people.
Holy crap. So the good thing about this is this has been going crazy online.
And, like, this was at, like, 8:15 in the morning. Like, he did this at, like, 8:15 in the morning, which is, like, the best part about it. Because, like, right afterwards, I literally, like, went to go get a cup of coffee, made a couple phone calls, sent out the emails I had to send out. And I walked into the Capitol. I was, like, talking to people in the Capitol. I was like, yo, you won't believe this video I just got.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
No, it was possibly one of the most stunning things I've witnessed.
Well, there you go.
At least the second one is the golf spikes, but
yeah, I mean, well, I think golf spikes still is number one. I mean, that's going to take a lot to cap that. I mean, the golf spikes was out of hand.
But
I mean,
okay, but for someone to do an unforced error like that. In front of people who are not related to the office or to the campaign, and you're in front of an adversary.
Right.
Like, and also, I guess another take is from this. I've been out here for 5 years now.
No, I mean, you're not an unknown quantity. Right. I mean, it's like, exactly. It's like, you're sitting there with a phone. That's the other part of it. Right. It's like, I mean, you're not, like, hiding in the bushes.
I'm 2 feet in front of his face.
Exactly. Right.
And so, he's looking right at me. Like, you could see him making eye contact with me the whole entire time. Like, are you getting this? Are you getting this? Are you getting this?
Exactly. I'm like, what the hell are you thinking? But no, this is why I still think that the golf spikes, the Wagner thing is still number one, because, like, Terzai, to some degree, walks into this one and then performs it. Wagner had to set that up. Right? Wagner planned that one. Right? So that's how it kind of worked. But, and he was provoked by it. So anyways, yeah, cool. So, anything else on that? Anything else going up the Capitol?
Not a whole lot. There's going to be some stuff going down this week. Don't know what. So maybe we'll see that. Also, Mike Fulmer resigned last week for child pornography. Don't know if we really can talk about that. It's shocking from the point where I've known the senator for the past couple of years. This caught me off guard, but yes, he should resign immediately. And yes, this is not a victimless crime. and that he should get the full weight of the law that's coming down on him.
Ding, ding, ding. Yep.
Like, I don't know what else is just left. It's completely indefensible. It's shocking because it's someone we've known in the Capitol and never suspected anything like that. He's going to go to jail probably, and most rightfully so.
Yep.
I mean, there's just no one else. There's no tolerance for this. There's no tolerance for anything, especially this, what he's been charged with. And he should absolutely be going to jail, and he has to serve his time for this. There's just nothing else.
Yep,
to extrapolate from this.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. Well, good. Well, hey, I forgot to mention this at the top of the intro, and I kind of briefly alluded to that, but I wanted to kind of tag this as something to just to make reference to here, a couple articles that were posted in Raging Chicken this week. In particular, first I should say that our intern, right, Steven, basically he's got another piece up there called Defunding Pennsylvania Schools. Starts and does some interviews up in Panther Valley and is looking at the same kind of stuff that Sean has been talking about here too, looking at some of the charter schools and some of the ways that Pennsylvania schools have been defunded. But I really want to draw your attention to especially a piece from Mike Gambone called Military Friendly Exposed as Higher Ed Pay-to-Play Scheme Targeting Veterans. And Mike, he's currently someone I've worked with for years. He and I were kind of basically helped organize the strike at Kutztown, at the Kutztown folks. We were kind of point people on that. And I've worked with him in the union for years. And right now he's the vice president of KU Abscuff. But kind of more importantly, he's also a veteran. And he's worked a lot with students at the school, right, on veteran issues and things like this. We got to notice once the sketch of the story is basically Kutztown University has been named as a kind of like quote unquote named as a military friendly school. They've got a big band, a big logo that's on their webpage called Military Friendly School. I just kind of re-upped it for 2019, and they're promoting it really heavily. Well, it turns out this little logo, what you basically get or how you get it is you basically pay money to a company. And they brand it for you, right? So it's not the kind of thing where you have a veterans organization who does all this analysis and then kind of and seeks out these schools that do a particular job. This is when schools actually seek out the brand that they can put on their website so they can market themselves as military friendly. Right. And it's very deceptive. Now, the Federal Trade Commission has actually investigated this. The organization is called Victory Media. They're based out of Pittsburgh. And now Victory Media has now changed its name to instead of Victory, like you would expect it, it's VIQTORY. Right. Apparently, they were getting a lot of negative searches, right, associations with their name. So they had to switch it. There's an organization called Veterans Education Success that did a report on them back in 2016. And they found that things, for example, that more than 257 schools that were awarded on military friendly status were not approved by the Department of Defense for tuition assistance or voluntary military education programs. There's no outside assessment of the military friendly survey, although Victory Media claims that its survey is validated by these auditors. And three, schools pay Victory Media for lead generators, a veteran's personal information for recruiting purposes. Veterans who initially registered on the Victory Media website do not know this, right? So it is a deceptive practice. The FTC has actually had a ruling on this fairly recently, just at the end of last year, that this is actually kind of deceptive marketing practices and targeting veterans, and it should be stopped, right? So that's the backstory. Now, what makes this story especially infuriating when it comes to Kutztown, because it's not just Kutztown University. Apparently, Westchester University also has the military-friendly status designation and some other ones, is that at least at Kutztown, this issue was made plain to them, right, over this past year. So the administration kind of saw this stuff, saw what was going on, saw that it was a pay-to-play scheme, saw that the FTC had investigated and found them guilty of deceptive practices, and yet they decided to ignore all that and continue forward with the branding, right? And that is really, really messed up. So check out Mike Gambone's story in just published yesterday and Raging Chicken Press, as well as Stephen's piece on education, defunding education in Pennsylvania. So.
And this already got the attention of some legislators in Harrisburg right after we shared this yesterday. I actually had one reach out to me and say they're going to be sharing their concerns with the chancellor over this. So
yeah, so
activist media works.
Yeah, heads up. Well, here's the thing, right? This is why I, you know, again, not to toot our own horn so much again, but as much to talk about the important role of this kind of media in the process. Like what I just laid out for you in a very sketchy way, right? Or a sketched way, like just summarizing it, not kind of going in all the detail of the article, but giving you kind of some of the highlights of that article. All of this stuff had been presented ahead of time, right? So if gone forward and attempted to do the right thing by following a process, right? And having an administration in our case, right? Ignore it. Right. And this is the same kind of stuff you see in any kind of movements for social change. Right. Any kinds of movement, however small or large, is that you go through this process. You attempt to kind of do the right thing. You want to bring out an injustice. You want to expose it, a fraud, and you get shut down. Right. By the administration. And they just ignore you. So and then if you went just some random politician and said, hey, check this out, they might check it out. It's only when you bring this stuff into the public. Right. It's only when you report on this and you report on it in unafraid ways, right, that you actually get movement on things. Right. So that's, you know, again, plug once again. That's why we've stuck with this. That's why we've decided to stay membership based so that we're not relied upon advertising dollars or some sort of like, you know, a third party donor or something like this. No, we want to have a membership driven thing. So we're accountable to the people in the movement. So there it is. So I have one more thing left for on the PA focus for today. It's like one, I mentioned this up top with my little kind of trademark snarkiness when it comes to what's been happening with the ABSCUF contract. Apparently, there's going to be an agreement in principle. It's a little bit frustrating, I have to say, as someone who has been part of ABSCUF, of our union, since back in 2002. When I first got a job at Kutztown University and was part of kind of helping to reform our union to make it more transparent, to make it more membership driven, to make it more or kind of like bottom up in terms of like how we drive policy and how we drive make decisions, to kind of completely transforming our negotiations process in such a way that it'll be more accountable. From my perspective, at least, what we've seen over this past negotiations with this new chancellor who comes in from Silicon Valley, right, with the Microsoft Corporation, Chancellor Greenstein, and now they started with this kind of interest-based bargaining, is that suddenly we've seen kind of like a reversal of some of this kind of transparency that we worked so hard to get. And so to the point where we get an announcement, we have no idea what's been going on in negotiations, other than it's going well and they're friends and there's pictures posted of the chancellor and our statewide leadership together at the table and they're smiling, right? It's been a weird thing to witness. And now to find out all out of the blue, there's an agreement in principle. We have no idea what those principles are, and we're told that we're going to have to wait to see what the language is specifically. Now, look, maybe it'll turn out to be good. I have no idea. Nobody does, right? Well, except for a few people on the inside. But what we're expecting now is that we're going to get a full PR campaign, like in support of whatever agreement in principle our kind of like win-win kind of people have come up with. And I just want to remind people, you know, this is one of the things that I reported on very early. We talked about on the show very early when Chancellor Greenstein got to get kind of came aboard. Right. He seems like highly competent, unlike past chancellors. He seems to kind of, you know, be kind of driven and kind of focused in ways that we haven't seen before. But it comes out of a discourse and a way of doing things that's based in kind of the Silicon Valley principles. And Anand, I'm going to kill his name every time. Jared Haradas, I think I got it that time. Anand Jared Haradas had this book called Win-Win, or Winners Take All, I'm sorry. And he documents what this discourse is and how it gets us to think about the world and how it puts us in a position where we are believing that the elite are the ones that are the change makers and not us. Right. It says we distrust the process from the bottom up of people being involved and anything that's potentially confrontational. We want to push that to the sidelines in favor of this win-win scenario. So it's worth checking that out. And again, I might be in a situation where we get this contract and it turns out, look, there's a lot of good stuff in there. That's great. But the fact is that we don't know. For me, at least, is raised my problematic sensors, let's say. Okay, so I'll leave it at that. So anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
Oh, yes. There's one good thing to put out there. Last Monday in the Capitol Rotunda, there was a bunch of stanchions that were put up in the rotunda because of traffic problems with people going in and out. They unofficially reduced the number of people to like 450 people that could be in there for a protest at a time. The way they had these stanchions set up was like literally like a free speech pen at the bottom of the steps. They did this to a way to like get people to allow for traffic to flow easier, right? So like there's this pen that was like the rectangle, and then there were stanchions put off next to the rectangle to allow for walkways to go through the House and then through the Senate. But you couldn't like cut through the rotunda, go straight through it, like walk around these stanchions. It was like a solution in a search of a problem, pretty much. As a couple of the people said, especially the ADAPT activists who have been fighting for access to the rotunda and to the Capitol for a while, and that's not a really great way of access. Was this happening? They removed most of the stanchions and put two stanchions on the sides of the rotunda, so it just allowed for like access for people to like walk straight through, like go off to the sides and walk around. So the rope line, the Studio 54 rope line that Mysik was talking about last week has been removed.
There you go.
And this is what happens. And this is what happens when you complain a lot on Twitter about a certain issue and you hammer the point home and you relentlessly mock it. It'll be gone within a few days.
There you go. There you go.
I will just say I'm not the one responsible for killing this. I think I might have a small part in it, but just from talking to the people all last week, this was a very bipartisan decision to have this thing removed, I bet.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
bringing people together,
it's a shock when you walk into the Capitol and see that, like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like
suddenly you're at Great Adventure lines, right? You know, it's like waiting to get on the roller coaster.
like where's my next my fast pass at? I mean, it literally create like a fast pass lane for the lobbyists to go through the rotunda without having to like speak to the plebs who are protesting.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what first came to my mind. I said, oh, I see. You got your high speed lane. I see.
Yeah. now the lobbyists and the plebs we'll have to interact once more.
Oh my God! God forbid! God forbid! The dirty, unwashed masses should kind of like have anything. So, but crazy. The other thing, just to put everybody on alert for, is keep posted with some things that will be kind of coming to the pages of Kutztown, Raging Chicken Press pretty soon. We got some ongoing investigations that are happening, particularly at the local level at Kutztown and some other places, but more on that soon. Today we're going to skip right today's last call, see if any good ideas are still got some of the good feelings here. And I got to say, huge, huge shout out to Free Will for closing out the summer with two just amazing releases, right? There are two mashes, and you remember I've been highlighting the mash releases all summer long. My favorite probably up until this weekend was the strawberry mash, which came out right at the beginning of the season. This one was the blackberry raspberry mash, and that is a sour ale brewed with blackberry and raspberry. And it's let me see if I give you the full thing. I'm not going to remember that, but it was absolutely fantastic. This blackberry raspberry mash. So it's a sour ale brewed with blackberry and raspberry puree, vanilla and milk sugar. Comes in at about 7.5 ABV, which is pretty much true for all their mashes. That was amazing. Like the raspberry and blackberry just like popped in your mouth. It was great. And then I had the blackcurrant chocolate mash, and I love the idea of that, right? I love the chocolate, the idea. So it was interesting, but I wasn't sure. So this is a sour ale brewed with blackcurrant puree, cocoa nibs, vanilla, and milk sugar, and comes in at 7.5 ABV. That was amazing. The blackcurrant chocolate mash was absolutely freaking amazing. That bitterness from the currants, right, with the sweetness, with, you know, not the sweet chocolate, but like, you know, you got this cocoa in there. It was, I mean, literally I took a step back after I had like my second sip. I saw it because I took the first sip, but I didn't get the chocolate much. When I got that second one, I was like, Oh, my God. So if you get a chance to get over to either location, either Free Will or what's the name of the other place? I forget it all the time.
Peddler's Village?
Peddler's Village. Thank you very much. I don't know why. I've never been able to keep that in my head. Not just with Free Will, but at all.
Have you ever, like, been there before?
Yeah, I've been there.
Okay. I was just wondering, because you keep on forgetting all the time. I just never know if you've gone there or not.
Well, let me tell you. I've been there. I don't go shopping there, right? There's the Giggleberry Fair is there, right? That place, this kid thing. And so most of the time I've been there has been for that.
Yeah, we've only gone there for like the Apple Orchard, the Apple Festival, yeah, the Strawberry Festivals, and then the Scarecrow Festival, like growing up.
Right. Yeah. So we went for the Scarecrow Fest, I think, one year, and it was so insanely packed, right, that we just like that we couldn't, like, my kids, we actually had ice cream for lunch because we couldn't find, we had, the wait was so long for food everywhere. So I personally can't stand going in that kind of crowd and where it's all about like shopping. But yeah, it's not my deal. But I have been at the tap room up there, and it's beautiful. They did an amazing job up there.
So I was in Pizza Boy this past week.
Oh, nice.
They got this new IPA on that, like, my friend gave to me for free without even, like, he just slipped me an 8-ounce pour of it. It's a double IPA. It's called Boss Viking.
Oh, so that's a tester, right?
Yeah. He got me to, he convinced me to buy a crowler of it. That's how good it is. It's a double IPA. It uses this, it's a new yeast strain or a different yeast strain called Viking yeast, mm-hmm, like somewhere out in Europe. But what it does is it allows ales to be fermented at higher temperatures. So you can turn IPAs over at a certain, at a faster rate. Like, you could have a fully fermented IPA done within like 10 days, like with this thing. So with this, you get, it's really nice. It gives off a different taste to it, very pungent taste. It's pretty interesting to see how the yeast strain actually adds taste to a beer. But yeah, definitely look forward to them using that a lot more, the Viking yeast strain. So,
nice.
Yes.
Nice. Awesome. And this is one other thing I'll throw in that I just kind of occurred to me I should mention this because I just thought it was awesome. So the Emmy Awards were just passing, and like, I pay virtually very little attention to that stuff on a normal basis. But the show Fleabag took like tons of, I think like 3 or 4 awards. And Fleabag, if you haven't watched it, I am going to put it on my strong recommend list. Okay. Fleabag is written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. It's this British woman. It originated as a one-woman show as part of her stand-up stuff. And then she is the primary writer. She stars in it and things like this. And it's one of the best shows. There's only 2 seasons, right? And it's like, it's perfectly written for 2 seasons. Right. And the it was the kind of thing that you're just like, whoa. And here's the tip. All right. So if you're going to stop, if you're going to watch Fleabag and take me up on this offer, you got to get to season 2. All right. Because it is written as a 2-season story. Right. And if you go to just stay with season 1 and you're kind of like, OK, season 1. OK, it was good, but it's just not quite your cup of tea and things like this. Stay with it to season 2 and it's all payoff. It is so good. And she deserves every bit of every award and accommodation that she possibly have. It was an absolutely fantastic series. So kudos to Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Fleabag. That was just an awesome show. And I think it took a lot of people by surprise that she kind of won so big at the Emmys this week. So how's that? Have you ever seen it, Sean?
I have not.
It's worth it, man. It's worth it. I'm telling you. It's a great show. All right, man. Anything else for the good of the order?
That's everything.
All right. That's everything. Sean's got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. And we shall see you hopefully at the end of this week, unless something crazy comes up once again. So anyways, this is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for sticking with us. RC Press. I mean, patreon.com/RC Press. Become a member today. See ya!
This Monday, world leaders are going to be gathered here in New York City for the United Nations Climate Action Summit. The eyes of the world will be on them. They have a chance to prove that they, too, are united behind the science. They have a chance to take leadership to prove they actually hear us. Do you think they hear us?
No!
We will make them hear us.